Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of what President Obama must do to reverse the momentum in the presidential campaign, which the media claims is shifting to Romney's favor. Adam Green, the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, joins us to discuss how Obama can refute a blizzard of lies coming from Romney while putting forth his vision for the future. Then we'll look into the Norwegian Nobel Committee, who have just awarded the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize to the European Union, which has some people scratching their heads. A Norwegian peace activist, Fredrik Heffermel, who has criticized the committee for not complying with Alfred Nobel's will, joins us. He is the author of The Nobel Peace Prize, What Nobel Really Wanted. Then finally, we will discuss the fate and future of Social Security, about which in the first debate, President Obama inexplicably said that he and Romney shared the same plans and policies. Nothing could be further from the truth, and we will discuss the Republican war on Social Security with Eric Kingston, who served as a policy advisor on two presidential commissions on the future of Social Security. We will discuss Pete Peterson's successful billion-dollar campaign to propagandize and demonize and invent a Social Security crisis. And joining me now is Adam Green. He's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which is a 1 million member grassroots organization dedicated to helping progressive candidates run progressive campaigns and win. He formerly serves as director of strategic campaigns and civic communications director for MoveOn.org. What's your sense of what President Obama can do on Tuesday night? Clearly, Vice President Biden has teed it up for him in the debate that he had with Paul Ryan. But Obama really has to knock it out of the ballpark because, according to the mainstream media, the momentum is shifting towards Romney, who is ahead in all of even in the national polls. So, what would your advice be?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of specifics that we could talk about, but the big thematic thing that pulls it all together is President Obama needs to show some fight. You know, the famous circus guy, Phineas Taylor Barnum, used to say, if you want to attract a crowd, pick a fight. And one thing that we saw in the first debate was President Obama seemed almost intentionally to not want to actually fight with Mitt Romney. And that gets directly to a point that I guess he'll be talking about later on the show, which is his inexplicable comment that he and Romney agree on Social Security, which is definitely, you know, not true. And Mitt Romney actively picked a guy who wrote the plan to privatize Social Security as his VP nominee. So I think at the end of the day, the reviews will be very good if President Obama goes into this debate willing to actually draw contrast and pick some fights with Mitt Romney. That's what people want to see in a strong leader.
So it seems to me, though, that what happened here was, in this first debate, was that Romney was very tactically shrewd, and he took the gamble that the American people essentially hadn't been paying attention to this long campaign about, you know, which is both of them have spent billions on, and Obama has successfully framed Romney as this Wall Street predator, and you know, his 47% remark had helped him. Even Romney's big money donors on the Republican side were abandoning him. They figured he was a loser. But he figured that I will come out at the time when, and in fact, 70 million people were watching, so he clearly made the right choice here. People will be watching for the first time, and I'll be this different guy, this likable guy that has nothing to do with my previous positions. And then Obama's going to look like a liar, and everything he said before is going to look like a lie. And that seems to have worked. The American people, perhaps they're shallow and capricious, but they seem to have bought it.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, you or I would be embarrassed to go on a stage and say things that directly disputed things that we have said, you know, just weeks or months ago. But I guess Mitt Romney has a certain gift for just being able to ignore that type of self-shame. And it did play to his benefit. But again, I think it comes back to you know, the idea of is President Obama willing to fight? You know, President Obama controls his own destiny in terms of whether people believe Mitt Romney's lies. If those lies go undisputed, right, if Mitt Romney is allowed to lie and President Obama won't pick a fight, well, then why shouldn't voters who are watching believe Mitt Romney? If it was wrong, then President Obama would dispute it. I think we actually saw Joe Biden really kind of rise to that test and, you know, knock things out of the ballpark during his debate when Paul Ryan falsely said that the stimulus was a waste of money, that it didn't create jobs. And not only did Joe Biden say that wasn't true, but he said, there are two letters that you, Paul Ryan, wrote to me, Joe Biden, which asked for stimulus money to create jobs in your district. And anybody watching at home has to just think, oh, Joe Biden is clearly right, and what Paul Ryan said was clearly wrong. So again, I think if we have that same level of kind of fact-checking on stage and correcting the record on stage, making a proactive case on stage, and drawing key contrasts on stage from President Obama, then he'll recover some of the momentum that he lost.
Again, I'm speaking with Adam Green, who's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which is a 1-million-member grassroots organization dedicated to helping progressive candidates run progressive campaigns and win. He formerly served as Director of Strategic Campaigns and Civic Communications Director for MoveOn.org. So how do you do both of those things at the same time? In other words, shoot down the blizzard of lies that will come from Romney and at the same time put forth your vision.
Well, you know, I would say that even if Mitt Romney wasn't lying, it still would fall on President Obama to essentially explain two positions, right? Elections are about contrasts. Elections are about choices. And it's really incumbent on anybody who's making their case to the people to say, here's what I believe, and here's what my opponent believes. Now, if the opponent just happened to lie about their position, you know, there's a little bit of nuance that you put in there about, you know, here's what he said about what he believes. But no matter what, you have to make the case about what Mitt Romney believes. So I actually don't think it's that tough, a needle to thread for President Obama to say, look, Mitt, you know, you just said that you're going to, you know, that you care about Social Security, but, you know, you're the guy who appointed Paul Ryan, who wrote the plan to privatize Social Security and Medicare, for that matter. You know, I'm the one who did X, Y, and Z. And, you know, through that contrast, voters will get a sense of where these candidates stand. You know, I would say that you mentioned, you know, some of our mission at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, boldprogressives.org, and one candidate that we're working with a lot this cycle is Elizabeth Warren. And she really did knock things out of the ballpark this past week in a big Massachusetts Senate debate against Republican Senator Scott Brown, where she, you know, said, I will not cut Social Security and Medicare benefits, my opponent will. You know, on women's issues, here's what I believe, and here's what my opponent actually voted. And I think that if President Obama takes a couple pages from that playbook, he'll be very well served this week.
So, Adam Green, it seems to me that from day one, the Romney campaign has been so brazen, it's breathtaking. The first ad that they ever made was back in Iowa when he was running in the primaries, where he put John McCain's words in President Obama's mouth. And if you go through the entire campaign, there's just endless examples. And now, and the latest one was in the vice presidential campaign, where they kept repeating, where Paul Ryan kept repeating this lie that the Obama administration had referred to the Assad murderers in Syria as reformers. And even on Fox News, one of the Fox personalities, I guess they're called, he was challenged, a representative of the Romney campaign, by saying, look, we've checked with the facts checkers that there's absolutely no evidence that anybody in the Obama administration has ever referred to Assad as a reformer. And the spokesperson for Romney just lied again. I mean, it turns out that the only reference was Hillary Clinton saying that it was being critical of some U.S. senators who had referred to Assad as a reformer. Again, they were putting somebody else's words in Hillary's mouth. So it's just, I find it extraordinary. Is it that it's just gone on too long that people have got used to it, or just do we live in a culture where the truth doesn't matter anymore?
Yeah, I think when the history books are written about this election cycle, a major, major chapter, if not the whole book, will be about how the idea of truth is being called into question. objective truth. And, you know, it's definitely a challenge. You know, I think it's a challenge for candidates, and it's a challenge for the media. And I think the easier part to address is, you know, the media. You know, there's a real conundrum that reporters have to face, where what do you do if one candidate lies once or says something that's not true once, and the other candidate says something that's not true 20 times? Do you write a story that's essentially 50-50, that says this person says something not true and this person says something not true, and ignore the other 19 instances on one candidate's part? Or do you actually write a story about one candidate having a consistent record of saying things that are not true? If you do that, you know, the stigma that a reporter might be afraid of is being called biased. But really, it's biased if you don't cover the truth, right? And I think when we look at the media culture that we have right now, this idea of false equivalency, the idea of saying everybody is equally responsible, the idea, you know, similarly, that we have gridlock in Washington because everybody fights, as opposed to, no, Republicans are intentionally obstructing the government from doing anything. Like, not reporting this accurately really distorts our entire democratic dialogue. So the media, I think the media, if they were doing their job, actually can do can find a solution pretty quickly, which is just call a spade, debunk the lies, and if someone's a real liar, you have to say that. For a politician, I think it's a little bit more of a challenge. You know, what do you do when your opponent in a debate is saying 20 things that are not true? How do you actually correct every single one? My guess, honestly, is that on some foreign policy issues, you know, Assad, you know, most voters, particularly swing voters, are not going to be casting their vote off of that. So if a politician decided not to check some things like that, I would understand. But for the things that voters are really paying attention to, are the Social Security plans really the same or not? Did the stimulus create jobs or drive up our deficit and not create any jobs? These are key, key parts of the Obama legacy. You know, is Obamacare a big waste of money, or is it going to help millions of lives? It seems like just due diligence in the course of preparing for a debate would say, let's identify the lies that are actually impactful lies our opponents have already said. Let's get the most damning rebuttals possible, like Joe Biden having Paul Ryan's letters right there, and let's be prepared to cite those in the debates. And again, I think if President Obama does that, he'll be pretty well served. I guess the curveball would be if Mitt Romney decides to just create completely new lies out of thin air. You know, the airtight rebuttal might not be there, but I think, you know, in the lion's share of the cases, there's a degree of preparation that Joe Biden apparently did that would really serve President Obama well, too.
So Adam Green, again, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, a 1 million-member grassroots organization dedicated to helping progressive candidates run progressive campaigns and win, and formerly served as director of strategic campaigns and civic communications for MoveOn.org. What happened in that first debate? I mean, obviously, a lot of people have been trying to analyze the apparent clear lackluster performance on the part of the president, and the sort of hyped up aggressive salesmanship, if you will, of Mitt Romney. Was it that the president's sort of just has disdain for this obvious salesman who'll say anything to close the deal? I mean, I don't explain, because obviously the contrast is pretty profound with Vice President Biden reacting to the absurdities that Ryan was putting out, which were identical to the absurdities that Romney's been putting out, particularly this constant refrain about Medicare Advantage. And everybody knows, that looked into it, that it was a huge Republican boondoggle, a gift to the insurance companies, that was a massive waste of money. It's easy to refute these things. So I just, in terms of, you know, now we have the split screen, which seems to be reasonable that the other person can react. The only reaction that we got from Obama in that first campaign was him sort of looking down at his notes. You know, he barely made eye contact. And I wonder whether it'll be different this time, whether you will see the president listening to this fatuous blather coming from this salesman.
Yeah, well, you know, I would guess that on, you know, that question, we will. It's hard to imagine the president watching the video of his own debate and not knowing to look up in the future. You know, on the broader question of, you know, what went on in that debate, I don't know if it was a strategic decision or not to essentially go in there and not put up a fight. But, you know, if it was, then the theory might have been coming out of this debate, no news is good news, I'm already leading, so let's just try to make this as non-confrontational as, and kind of as non-story a debate as possible. But again, when you do that, you cede the debate to the guy who's willing to fight. So I think that, again, at the end of the day, he needs to be willing to get in, up in there. And if he does have disdain for Mitt Romney, and particularly Mitt Romney's ideas, he needs to show it, and he needs to draw contrasts. He doesn't have to be mean and nasty, but he needs to say, Mitt, this is where you stand, and this is why I disagree, and here's why I've done, and here's what I'll do. If he does that, you know, it sounds so obvious. It's not what he did in the first debate. He just did not draw that contrast. So we're bold progressives. We want a little bit of boldness from this president, and I think, you know, the lion's share of voters, you know, want their president to be strong as well. And if he sits back and lets Mitt Romney lie, there's no reason for voters of their own volition to think it's a lie. The president needs to, debunk those lies.
Well, Adam Green, you've had run-ins with this White House before. I think Rahm Emanuel used the F word in telling you to get the hell out of there. Or I think he said effing retard or something, because you were arguing even back then that they should get bolder and more progressive. And it seems to be there's a kind of, a sort of smug centrism there at the White House that is blind to the needs of their own constituencies. I mean, yeah. We want a winner. We don't want wimps. We've had enough wimps on the Democratic side. We've had the Mondales and the Dukakises and the Kerrys, and it's just a history of these guys wimping out and wimping out in the face of the equally fatuous candidates like Gore allowed George W. Bush to win 3 debates, for God's sake. So what's going on in that White House? This kind of advice that Obama must have gotten from these people smacks to me of that sort of smug centrism that gets you nowhere.
Yeah, well, if you ever want to have a complete hour-long discussion on this, I'm happy to. This really gets kind of the core philosophy of our organization at boldprogressives.org. But just to quickly, make sure your listeners know, the comment, the Rahm Emanuel comment that you mentioned came during the healthcare fight when our organization was pushing all Democrats to have a backbone and stand up for the most popular thing in the healthcare proposal, which was a public option, a public health insurance option run by the government that competes head-to-head with private insurance, but that doesn't have a profit motive to deny people care. And we would do polling in state after state, even supposedly red states, and people wanted this public option. So we ran television ads pressuring Senator Ben Nelson in Nebraska, who is rightly unpopular and therefore retiring, because he was not supportive of the public option. And Rahm Emanuel, in some meeting, referenced these ads that we were doing against this Democratic senator, pressuring him, and called them effing retarded, which really is reflective of a broader mentality of not pressuring politicians to do what their constituents want. I mean, I really hope that at some point in my lifetime, I live in a world where there are two parties that actually represent 50% of the people each, and where, therefore, compromise is a necessity in order to bring the country forward. But we're living in a world right now where, frankly, on almost every economic issue of the day, whether it's should we cut Social Security benefits, should we cut Medicare benefits, should we raise taxes on the rich, should we ask Wall Street to pay their fair share and be reformed, should we hold Wall Street bankers accountable, these are 80-20 issues. And, what do you do if you're the Democratic Party? And 80% of the people, including many Republican voters, are on your side on these key issues of the day. And Republicans in Washington draw a line in the sand and give you 0 votes. Do you throw your hands up in the air and say, well, I guess we don't have the votes. Better compromise and take the 20% position, a position that gives away the farm to the insurance companies and the big drug companies? Or do you actually pressure politicians to be in touch with their constituents? Do you go outside of D.C. like we did in this TV ad and like Obama for America could do with their huge grassroots army and pressure people in their home states? And if you do, my guess is that they'll crack after a while, because the only thing that allows them to draw these absurd lines in the sand that are out of touch with their own constituents is that nobody ever talks about it. There's no reason for the media to cover it if there's no clash, if the Democrats are not even attacking them for it. So, generally speaking, you know, we think that good policy and good politics go hand in hand in this current era. And the idea of kind of cutting back room deals with big insurance companies and stuff like that is, you know, just lines you up for defeat and results in things like, unfortunately, the mandate that we got as opposed to, you know, Medicare for All or a public option, which would have been a way more popular version of Obamacare. So, you know, I agree with your top line point, which is, you know, we need people who are not wimps. But I want to make clear to your listeners that there's a real philosophy around this, one that does not pit the base against things that are politically smart, but that actually tries to move the Democratic Party in a position where they're willing to buck these corporate interests and adopt these 80% sides of these 80-20 issues.
Well, Adam Green, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Adam Green, who's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which is a 1 million-member grassroots organization dedicated to helping progressive candidates run progressive campaigns and win. He formerly served as Director of Strategic Campaigns and Civic Communications Director for MoveOn.org. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how awarding the European Union the Nobel Prize for Peace goes against the will of Alfred Nobel.